Firstly, thank you, David, and good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and thanks for the opportunity to address SEDA this afternoon or at lunchtime in regard to energy outlook. I'll cover off. Firstly, I think it's quite important to explain to you who is Mincor, what are we, what do we do, and what's our role. And then I'll actually cover off. You've all got a brief brochure on Vision 2030, which is a 25-year outlook on energy requirements for the state of Victoria for both electricity and gas. Who is Mincor? What are we? Why do we exist? We're an energy planner for both gas and electricity. As David said, we're a market developer. We're the gas operator in the state of Victoria. We facilitate gas FRC in the state through the IT systems, and we're a gas and electricity emergency manager. We are a statutory authority formed under the Gas Industry Act with an independent board of directors. We're funded by market fees, and we're a not-for-profit, and our fees or any surplus or deficit goes back to the industry that we serve. So in regard to what we actually do in regard to our objectives, and I think these are quite important to put it in context, our mission is that Mincor ensures the efficient and effective delivery of energy for the benefit of the Victorian community. And the key part there is it's the entire community that we're trying to look after. So it is to try and balance environmental issues, industry issues, government requirements, etc., etc. Our vision that Victoria will achieve the most reliable and cost-effective energy supply through competitive national markets. Again, the key is the end of that. It's the competitive national markets. We're actually looking for market-driven solutions. We're actually looking for the market to react to the information that it has and not intervene, both ourselves or the government. Before we actually get to Vision 2030, it's quite important that we look at what have we currently got in regard to assets in the transmission area. In gas, and I apologise if it's a bit dark to see, and these slides will be available on SEDA's website, so in gas it's quite interesting. We have our major gas flow from Longford in the Latrobe Valley. It flows into Melbourne metropolitan area in Geelong, which is basically the greater load centre. Since 99, when we had the 98, when we had the Longford disaster, we've actually now got gas coming out of Iona, and interconnectors with New South Wales both via Culkeen and through the Eastern Gas Pipeline. And as of January last year, we've actually got an interconnection into South Australia through the Seagas Pipeline. So basically the technology is underground pipelines, underground pipes, a network which basically brings it up into the control set, into the load centres, and compressor stations. Electricity transmission network, funnily enough, isn't that much different. Yes, it's overhead power lines, terminal stations, but at the end of the day, we have the Latrobe Valley as the centre of our generation, bringing the bulk of supply into Melbourne and Greater Geelong, which is our greater load centres, and then interconnectors, two interconnectors into South Australia, and our interconnector into New South Wales via the north, and Basslink in the next few months will actually provide an interconnector into Tasmania as well. So I guess the real issue here is that we don't expect the topology of this network to change a huge amount over the next 25 years. And one of the challenges is to actually get more out of what we've got before we actually augment them and continue to grow. The technology in the transmission area, as Nino will attest, moves very slowly. Yes, digital technology moves very fast, but poles and wires don't change a lot, nor do transformers, nor do circuit breakers. And as I said, the real issue is how do we get more out of what we've got. Just a little bit more about Mincor. So what do we actually do? We assess the adequacy of the transmission network to support demand, supply and demand for the state of Victoria, which means that we actually have to forecast the demand side. We seek to economically remove electricity constraints to support supply and demand, so we actually identify what are the constraint points in the network, how do we actually remove those so we can actually supply further. And we can do that in three ways. We can either increase network capacity, which Mincor would call tenders for, or contract generation, or more demand-side management. So being an independent planner allows us to actually assess each of those options independently. In order to actually identify the constraints and assess whether they should be removed, we actually apply a specific planning criteria, which is a probabilistic approach, which it looks at the probability of losing load and looks at placing a value on that lost load, and therefore, what's the economics of removing the constraint compared to what the load that we would lose. And we do that via the reg test and assessing a value of customer reliability and security. Finally, it's about optimising the network and also monitoring network performance, especially in regard to load, which is generators and interconnectors. I guess a critical point is the planning criteria we use is open and transparent. It's on our website, so everybody knows what criteria we're actually going to use to actually look at and remove constraints. And again, this is part of allowing the market to actually drive solutions and allowing the market to predict what we're going to do rather than be shocked by what we do. In order to do that, we actually produce two key documents. We produce a medium-term planning document for electricity and gas. The electricity annual planning review is released every June, and the gas annual planning review is released every November. And these documents basically look at identifying constraints on the two networks and also forecasting demand for those two networks. In October 2005, we also produced a long-term planning document, which was Vision 2030, which basically looked at what's going to happen to our infrastructure needs over the next 25 years, and for the first time for both electricity and gas. As I said, the idea behind these reports is to provide the energy sector with lengthy investment signals that allows them to do their planning and gives them some certainty as well. Today's focus is basically on Vision 2030, which is now no longer 25 years out, but close enough, and looking at what are our needs in that. As I said, you have a brief summary of Vision 2030, and there is some limited number of documents of Vision 2030 available at the end of the presentation, but it's also on our website. So what is Vision 2030? It's a 25-year vision for electricity and gas transmission networks for the state of Victoria. It actually identifies potential investment in new transmission capacity required over the next 2.5 decades. And it's the first time that a document's been produced for Australia where it actually looks at our energy needs as a total, where it looks at both electricity and gas together, their interdependency, and what augmenting one means to the other. I think, importantly, it shows the growing links and the interaction between the electricity market and the gas market. And I believe, ultimately, we should be heading towards an energy market in this country and not two separate markets, because basically we interact greatly between them. Vision 2030 is based on scenario planning, and Vision 2030 wasn't about guessing which scenario was right. It was more about identifying the constraints, identifying the issues that each scenario puts up, and then allowing to see what happens. Before I go on, Vision 2030 was actually developed by Vencorp in conjunction with Nous Consulting and the industry as a whole, and it was done, again, in a very open and transparent manner through workshops, interviews, etc. Basically, the outworkings of all those are the document. The four scenarios, I mean, are quite simple. A carbon response, look at what would happen if we have to limit carbon emissions and therefore a long-term move away from things like coal and more a move towards gas and renewables such as wind. What impact does that have on our transmission network? Secondly, looking at things like national superhighways, where the national electricity market operates as a single region rather than state by state, and rather than state borders, we actually remove the brick walls that we have between states, and therefore we get a flow inter-region of without transmission constraints, and therefore our generators can actually bid on a national market on a national basis. What impact would that have? Also, as part of that superhighways, we actually look at what would impact would happen if the gas reserves in Victoria depleted and therefore we'd have to bring gas into the state. What would that mean to our infrastructure? Third one was strong economic growth. Basically, the scenarios are modelled upon a peak summer electricity demand of about 17,000 megawatts. It's currently about 8,700. And a peak of gas demand of about 2,200 terajoules per day. And it's currently about 1,200. So a strong economic growth is even more than that. So we've actually allowed for an extra 2,000 megawatts of electricity demand, both residential and manufacturing, and an extra 0.5% growth in the gas market. And then thirdly, what happens if our extreme peaking, our electricity needs, our peak is for about 1% of the time, and what happens if that peak continues? And basically that peak is driven by air conditioning load. So extremely hot days, our electricity has got quite a strong peak. As I said, Vision 2030 was not about guessing which one was right. It's actually looking at the impact of all these on the infrastructure and what impact that has. Just to give you an idea of our needs, we've got about 1.6 million gas customers in Victoria. There's no need to tell you there's a heavy reliance on gas amongst business and residential, especially during the cold weather, where we actually peak with all our gas heating. We have the largest residential gas market in Australia by far, and consumption's growing around 1.6% per annum. With a peak demand of last year of 1,234 terajoules. And to give you an idea in the fluctuation of the gas market, on some days we supply as low as 300 terajoules per day up to 1,200. So there's a factor of four that the transmission network needs to handle. As we said, going out, it has to handle about 2,200 terajoules. Electricity needs, we've got about 2.5 million electricity customers throughout Victoria. Again, a heavy reliance on electricity, residentially basically for air conditioning load, which is basically hot weather driven, and an all-time peak this year of 8,730 megawatts. However, we actually, in our forecasting, we do a 10 percentile probability of exceedance, and this summer we believe our 10 percentile probability of exceedance was 10,100 megawatts. So again, the electricity network can handle at least 10,100 megawatts. It goes as low as about 5,000 megawatts overnight. At the moment, we're about 8,700, but you know, 3 or 4 hot days in the middle of summer, without the school holidays, without public holidays in between, that's the sort of load we're looking at. And again, consumption growing around 2.6% per annum. As I said, I showed you the maps briefly of what we've currently got. Our electricity and gas transmission infrastructure is currently valued at least around $2 billion, with a replacement cost of between $6 and $8 billion. And the total retail value of the Victorian stationary energy market is worth about $8 billion per annum. So there is actually quite good sense to actually make sure it works and works well. Vision 2030 actually came up with what do we need in the future, and the potential requirements for investment in new transmission capacity to meet the state's needs range from about $1 to $2 billion over the next 25 years. Much of the growth, without surprise, really occurs across Melbourne and Geelong, which is our major load centres. And a further $2 to $6 billion is possibly required for major long-haul electricity links and gas pipeline links that would make Victoria a major importer of energy from remote sources. Now, these are basically, as you said, the scenarios are and-ors and ifs and buts, because they don't all add up exactly. Because if something happens in one scenario, it might not happen in another, etc. But you can tell there's somewhere between $1 and $6 billion worth of investment required in the state over the next 25 years. Rather than actually identify individual constraints, we actually broke up the state into major corridors. And you can tell from the map at the start, the corridors break themselves up. We have the Eastern Corridor that basically delivers energy needs from the Gippsland and the Latrobe Valley, Greater Melbourne and Geelong, which is a major load centre. We then have the Southwest Corridor, which is now opening up for more gas supplies, and our Northern Corridor, which basically delivers energy across into New South Wales. As I said, there's $1 to $2 billion worth of investment required in the transmission network, and basically that investment is required to meet capacity requirements over the next 25 years. In gas, the Eastern Corridor requires about $80 million, and that would increase capacity by about 25%. The Southwest Corridor needs a capacity increase of about 200% at the cost of $190 million. Melbourne and Greater and Geelong, for the load centre, is about 60% increase in capacity at a cost of about $100 million, and the regional areas have got about a 50% increase in capacity at the cost of about $75 million. It's interesting that the numbers are not dissimilar for electricity, again with the Eastern Corridor capacity growth of about 85% at the cost of $250 million, the Southwest Corridor 100% growth with $175 million, Melbourne and Geelong 75% load growth in electricity at about $600 million, and regional areas about $465 million for a 70% increase. So the issue there really is they're the sort of numbers that we're looking at just to meet capacity requirements and capacity needs for both electricity and gas in Victoria. If, as I said, we need to actually invest for long-haul investment and actually to bring electricity and gas into the state and increase the amount of electricity and gas we take out of the state, the numbers look quite different. The Eastern Corridor, we're talking about $1.2 billion for gas in order to actually get more gas either in or out of Longford. The Northern Corridor, we're talking about up to $3 billion in order to increase both gas imports and exports to New South Wales or right through to PNG, but also to be able to export and bring more electricity in from New South Wales. And the same with the Southwest Corridor, where we're looking at something like $3.6 billion for gas, and $85 million to strengthen our interconnectors with South Australia. It's interesting when you actually look at what factors will actually affect that investment. Why will that investment happen or not happen? What drives it? And as I said, a couple of the critical issues are the transmission legacy assets. We have to keep using them. They are what they are, and they will be there for a long time. We're talking about assets with asset lives of 80 to 100 years, 40 years is a minimum. So it's no good, you know, you've got to throw them out and start again. The new investment, which is what we're really talking about here, is basically driven by four key issues. First one is energy demand. You know, what's the projection trends? What will drive that are things like lifestyle, things like smelter loads, whether they increase or decrease, gas-fired generators, other commercial load, and things like in-use technology. As we were saying at my table before, will my wife take an indication of electricity prices for the use of her air conditioner? I don't think so at the moment. You know, petrol prices have gone up, but people still drive their cars. So, you know, maybe it's in-use technology where things become more efficient that will actually drive demand. At the end of the day, if you've got a demand, you actually need supply. Where is our supply going to come from? Will it be fuel? Obviously, it will be driven by fuel location and price. Some of the old plant we're going to have will probably be retired in the next 25 years. What technology will we have in the generation sector and gas exploration areas? And what's the investment climate? And therefore, what are the energy market prices as the signals for when we need new supplies? On the other half, if you're going to invest in meeting those needs, you're going to need what sort of authorising environment do we have, both in the state and nationally? What are we going to do with carbon emissions policy? What happens to competition policy, investment regulation, renewable energy policies, even down to community attitudes? You know, remember the old SEC had problems building a line from Richmond to Brunswick overhead? We put it underground. That was the last major EHV line built in Victoria from scratch. We've upgraded one from 220 to 500 kV, but the next major line will be needed in the next 25 years. How's that going to be built? Where will it be built? What technology will be used to build it? And the last one, which is actually probably as key as the other three, is how are we going to build it? Where have we got the skilled people, the technology and the resources and the money to actually do it? And one of the areas that the whole industry needs to address is the issue of skilled people to actually do this infrastructure. Just to give you some more of the figures behind Vision 2030, Victoria is currently 5 million people. We expect by 2030 it'll be 6 million. We expect air conditioning growth to continue, and the penetration rate in Victoria at the moment is 55%. We expect that to go at least to 70% in the next 10 years. And climate change, there were 8 days in 2004-05 of over 35 degrees. By 2030, CSIRO data tells us there'll be at least 10 days, so those air conditions will be used even more. So our energy demands are actually increasing, not decreasing. As we said, our growth centres are Melbourne and Geelong with some regional areas, and, well, there's going to be more of us and we're all going to be older, so that will actually also drive energy demand because actually as we get older, the age profile will actually alter within the state. So we'll have more people in the 30 to 50 age bracket and more people who actually want to live quite comfortably and have more disposable cash so they can turn on their air conditioners and drive cars. The other issue we raised was also the long haulage is actually bringing energy into the state. And if we do that, we're actually going to have to look at not only the cost of the infrastructure investment within the state, but actually the cost of bringing the energy to the state. And at the moment, we basically get our gas out of Longford and the Otways, and you can see that's at the bottom end of the graph. If we start bringing in Timor Sea, PNG, or even Moomba gas, the price go up by a factor of 5 and a factor of 10 just for the cost of haulage, plus the cost of the energy. It's not dissimilar if you look at the comparative cost of electricity for generators. At the bottom end, when you look at emissions, with high emissions is the low-cost coal. At the other end of the scale, you have things like wind and renewables with very low emissions or no emissions, but also the higher cost. So again, there's actually a need for technology to address those sort of issues and try and bring those costs closer so that people can actually start implementing those as part of where we head with our energy sector. I haven't covered, there's actually a number of projects currently in progress in Victoria. Basslink, which has ceased its operational trial, will actually be in operation in the next few months, so we'll actually have a link to Tasmania. There is a gas-powered generator being built at Laverton, which we expect in service in the third quarter of this year. We are putting in more transformers, another 2,000 MVA transformers in the transmission network, which again will increase the capability to deliver demand throughout the next few summers. And there's a whole range of other upgrades that we continually look at. On the gas side, the ACCC handed down its draft decision to actually increase and build the Corio Loop, which is start of the infrastructure down the southwest corridor. And again, there's a number of upgrades we're looking at as part of our laterals. As I said, Vision 2030 was released by the Minister for Energy Industries in October last year, and he actually said that Vision 2030 provides a 25-year energy sector outlook for Victoria, and more importantly, it's a blueprint that will deliver a secure supply of energy across the state. As I said at the start, Vision 2030 was not prepared to give the answers, or actually guess what the answers would be, but it actually assists the energy industry to meet Victoria's infrastructure challenges over the next 25 years. And as I said, the full details are available on our website, and I'll hand across to Nino. Thank you.